Hello, horror fans. Welcome back to Selling the Scream. Wait, is that right? Are we back with Selling the Scream? Josh, is that true? Am I reading this correct?
Hold on. Let me see if I can blow some of the dust off of this old podcast. That's good quality audio, right?
Yeah, just blow right into that microphone. That's the only way. That's the only way they'll know.
That we've cleared the dust off of this episode. Yeah. Hey, we're doing a podcast. Doing a thing. Welcome back, friend.
Welcome back. It's Selling the Scream, the show about horror movies, brought to you by one horror nerd and one horror noob. In case you forgot, I'm Jed Donaldson, the aforementioned noob. And with me today is, you know, as usual, my bro, Josh Yoakum. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. I didn't know if you were gonna say that I had like your friend with perfect nipple placement. Or, you know, in something
I mean,
else.
Anyone has met you know that's the case. they're stupendous.
Yeah. I'm doing well. How are you?
You know what? I can't complain. It's been a little while since we did this thing. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing.
Recharge the batteries.
Yeah. Things get a little stale.
I think it's just because we saw Possessor and we just both got so scared by it that we had to go into hiding for a while.
I saw the title up to the title card of Possessor.
it was a challenging one for sure.
It was too scary for me.
In the meantime, you since we recorded our last episode in the spring, you came out to Portland and visited.
I did. That was a good time.
Went to Seattle first, and you got to experience me turning into my grandmother and being like concerned that everybody was having a good time. Enjoy yourselves, damn it.
No concern necessary. We had a good time. The only downside of the trip up there was I did something to my foot and I was laid up in my hotel room for a day while I could not walk around without excruciating pain. So, you know, that happens when you get older, I guess.
Everybody just falls apart, or yeah.
Yeah. There was no reason for it. I didn't like take a fall, or I wasn't playing sports. Just being in an airplane for too long made my foot go no.
It was cool to see you and got to see the sights here, and it's just been kind of a busy time for me. I moved to a new place, and you know, after like doing a lot of writing for a while, a lot of studios expressed some interest in my scripts over the summer. It's pretty, for the first time, they said something about like asking if I was part of a guild, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not that big of a nerd, and just
that's weird.
It's awesome. It seems like a lot of the interest dried up like maybe about like a week or two ago, but when God closes the door, he opens a window. I'm the new host of the Drew Barrymore Show, so got that going.
Congratulations. Are they going to make you change your name?
They're going to leave it to the viewers to just kind of figure that one out. They're going to, I guess that's fine. Drew's not a gendered name, so that works. Yeah, sure.
I mean, it could be. I mean, it could go either way. It could be a gendered name if you try hard enough.
What do we talk about gendered names on the show?
Not frequently enough. We do not. Typically, what we talk about is, you know, horror films, particularly ones that Josh has chosen in an attempt to turn me, a neophyte to the genre, into a fan. It's done all right. I don't want to give him a swell.
I think my head's very swell. But we got a special one this week, of course. One of the things I think frequent listeners to the show know about me is that anytime there's a Friday the 13th in a month, I'm very excited. And we just had one. And it was an October Friday the 13th, so like double trouble.
Right. Like normally the boner starts about a week before. This is a month long.
Yes. Yeah. No. It's a good time. I get to watch like the movie we did, and I put on another one. But yeah, this time we decided. Well, I decided because I'm kind of steering this ship, and
we're
into troubled waters with the Friday the 13th franchise. Let's just be clear.
I mean. Look, I am open to the possibility that a good one exists.
Yeah. Well, as of at the end of this episode, we will have discussed half of the series. We are doing our sixth Friday the 13th film, all out of order as the USA Network intended. But last time we did the very first Friday the 13th, two of the five that you gave a thumbs up to. Yeah. So Jason Patton, a Hall of Fame 400 right now.
Yeah.
We're going to see if we can get that up to 500 with the last Friday the 13th movie, the reboot from 2009. So are you excited about the holiday, at least, even if this movie, I don't know
I'm
where it's going to fall for
that
you.
You're excited.
Did you do anything for the holiday? Did you make little hockey mask cupcakes or get machetes for the kids?
I personally did not. We did have, you know, my wife and I own a small little store that does like baking classes and decorating classes and things like that. Now, they had a horror movie baking class that they did.
Oh, nice.
Like hockey mask cupcakes and things of that nature.
Yeah.
I mean, the season is definitely being recognized.
Well, good. I always am glad to hear that people are properly observing spooky times before we get into this long stretch of Christmas time celebration.
I mean, some people are already in that Christmas.
Yeah, no, I definitely saw Christmas stuff in stores before I saw Halloween stuff.
Same.
But yeah, we're doing the 2009 reboot. So I think normally when I kind of talk about these Friday the 13ths, kind of go through a little bit of like where the series was at and kind of how these things got put together. So we did the last Paramount movie, but we have not done anything post Paramount with our good friend Jason Voorhees. Right. So part eight was the final one that was under the Paramount banner. And then the rights got picked up by New Line Cinema, who did they did Jason Goes to Hell, the final Friday. They also did Jason X, the one where he goes to space. One of those left me very disappointed as a 13-year-old on my birthday in a movie theater. But I've since, my heart softened a little bit for Friday the 13th, part nine, the old Jason Goes to Hell. But he was kind of dormant for a little while until finally the thing that had been long rumored to been in the works and had been built up, fallen apart again, finally happened. And this is the one Friday the 13th movie, Jed, that I know you saw before we started this whole endeavor. They made Freddy versus Jason.
Saw this in the theater, I believe.
Yeah, it was a runaway smash hit. It was more money than any, I believe, any of either series had ever made. That's a movie that maybe has aged a bit like milk. We'll get to it eventually, but
I remember nothing about it.
It was fun. I remember in the theater, it was a really good time. I remember like the audience was a hooting and a hollering. So, but like a lot of renewed interest in where we could go next. Where we ended up going next was everything started getting the reboot. Probably the reason this one exists in the form that it exists in is that the director of this film, Marcus Nispel, made for Platinum Dunes, Michael Bay's production company, the remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And that movie did gangbusters. You had star power of Arlie Ermey and Jessica Biel. I actually really like that movie. I think it's a very good remake, especially compared to a lot of the other ones that have come out around this time. I know you probably haven't seen that just based on the premise of the show.
Yes, the premise of the show states that no, I have not.
But that was a massive success too. That made like I think nearly $200 million. So they started looking into acquiring these other rights, and I think at the same time, like My Bloody Valentine gets remade in 3D. Not too long after that, Prom Night gets remade. It's somehow even worse than the original Prom Night. And then they go into this one, and they bring the same director on board. It's funny to get an interview about it. He's like, I was really worried about Texas Chainsaw Massacre because that's such like a holy movie. This one, who cares if we mess it up?
So, frankly, I completely understand that attitude. Because, yeah, my opinion on Texas Chainsaw Massacre is much higher than my opinion on Friday the 13th at this point.
Yeah. I have made the argument in the past. I've made it as a selling point that part of the appeal of Friday the 13th is that it's always been stupid. It really does, like, and we'll get into how this particular one is stupid. But, yeah, there's less preciousness about it. They didn't really feel like they were on hallowed ground, which maybe created some conflict on the set between the producers and the director who made this statement. The producers very much wanted this to be like perfect and make them as much money as the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh yeah, I don't want to like disparage them. I'm sure that they wanted to put out a profitable and successful movie, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know that I trust their motive as far as treating the character or the property with any sort of reverence, but I think at least they would want to hire somebody who would be willing to not treat it as a joke.
his background is kind of interesting. He's a German dude, and he made like a couple other movies before this, but he was like one of those big like music videos guys. Like he just made like, if you go through his IMDb, it's like 100 different music videos, and even if you don't know the video, like all the artists are pretty big. It's like LL Cool J and Billy Joel and like Faith No More. Sure. The one I knew was he did the video for Spiderwebs, the No Doubt song.
Okay.
It was off their initial blow up album. So I think he's a capable dude. Like he's not. I think if there are quibbles to be had with this movie, and I can sometimes take off my rose colored glasses to look at this series and look at them critically. I don't think it's incompetently made, and I also don't really even think it's like, for the most part, the actors are consistent with the quality of the series, at least maybe a little higher. There's some star power. There's some future star power here.
I don't think that it would be too much of a giveaway to say that I have quibbles with this film, but I think in terms of how it's put together and like the technical aspects of it,
yeah,
nothing wrong with it there.
The screenwriters, right, it's the same two guys that wrote Freddy versus Jason. Okay. But they very self-consciously wanted to not have the same tone as that movie. They wanted to, because we'll talk about that one eventually at some point, but it being one that you've seen, it's got like a more like screamish tone. It's got more of a like aware of itself kind of,
yeah,
knows the movie, knows the expectations type attitude. They just wanted to make a straight ahead slasher. They wanted to take what they liked about the first four movies in the series and what, again, the director's words, not mine, do the Reader's Digest version.
Yeah, you know what, though? I mean, you had mentioned this before I even sat down to watch it, that it was kind of like, oh, they try to do like the first four movies again in all at once. I honestly don't have much of a problem with them doing that. I think that's actually a pretty decent idea for a reboot, is to take kind of like, I don't want to say like the greatest hits, but take the stuff that works from the early installments in the franchise and kind of remold them into something a little more cohesive. Because in all honesty, I mean, what are these movies except a lot of teenagers getting killed and having sex and all that stuff, right? Like a lot of it's
really say young adults.
Okay, sure, young adults, fine. Because we don't want to get canceled.
My big teenager.
Yeah, big teenager is going to come down on
it. You say that, I'm actually like really terrified of big teenagers.
Teenagers are, yeah. We didn't talk about this at the top of the show, but I recently started working for the public library, and I'm right next to a high school, and some of the people that come in afterwards are like, sir? They're like 30 years younger than me, but I got to address them properly, put some respect on the name.
Well, they might give you a wedgie or shove you like down the stacks or something.
I don't know, man. Some of these kids.
Say something real cutting, something that just like guts you immediately.
Right. Something that hits me right where I'm sensitive.
they wrote this one to be like that straight ahead combination of all the other ones. They did want to get straight to Jason. So
yeah,
when we get into how this movie works,
I think that's fine. Like I said, a lot of the movies are in fact just kind of interchangeable kills. So it makes sense to kind of, you don't need to do all of that again every time. You don't need to like remake one, remake two, remake three, remake four, especially with a franchise that has so many entries in it already.
Yeah, no, I don't object to that approach at all either. I think they do a pretty good job with it. I maybe as a fan of Mrs. Voorhees, of good old Pam, I would have liked to have seen her get a little bit more, maybe the space that the other pre-credit sequence gets, since we have two pre-credit sequences in this movie for the title drop.
Yeah. I think yes, yes, absolutely yes. one is decidedly higher quality than the other.
They did film this in Texas, which is it's very funny to me that for a series that's like very much about like the New Jersey camping experience and the first movie being so New Jersey, that Crystal Lake has like never gone back to New Jersey since.
Yeah, I mean,
and also like you're trying to differentiate this from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre you just remade,
right? Maybe not put it in the same state, like right down the street next door.
We found some great locations directly across the street. The other thing that kind of cracks me up this movie, like setting wise, is that like the one of the main sets, the hunting lodge that there are like big group goes to, does not feel like it belongs in Texas at all. It feels like it belongs like on a map, like a ski resort,
right? For, like, hunting lodge. No, definitely. When I think like large kind of installations like that in Texas, it's more ranch than ski lodge, but that is kind of the vibe you get from this place.
But I think some other things like kind of worth talking about is that like they mentioned that there's like some star power in the cast. It is a CW network star powered cast.
CWAF.
I assume you recognize Ryan Hansen from Party Down.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Was any other standouts? Do you watch any of the other shows that these people are involved with? Did you like?
No, I mean, I recognize Jared Padalecki. I watched a decent amount of Supernatural.
Okay. So, do you know how many seasons of Supernatural there are?
I believe there were 13.
15.
15. All right. Well. 15. Fuck me, I guess.
Just, it's one of those shows like, okay, I know it's been on a long time, but wait, what? Like.
Yeah, I knew it was in the teens. I think I ended up watching like maybe five of them. I quite liked the show. It just, you know, after five seasons, I was like, I get it.
Oh yeah, no shade at all, because I'm not a Supernatural person, but I knew one of these other actors from another series that's like maybe a little bit of shame in the game, guilty pleasure. Is that Danielle Panabaker is Killer Frost from like the Arrowverse and Flash.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I watched the first season of the Flash show, and that was enough.
Well, the first season's the good one.
Yeah. I started second. I'm like, nope, this is nope. I'm good.
One of the other cast members who kind of went on to at least be in something that I really enjoyed is Jonah from Superstow. Ben Feldman is in the opening bit of this. I don't know if you ever watched that show.
I don't think so. It doesn't sound familiar.
Yeah, and he's been in a few other things too. That's like Richie, the guy who's like getting lucky and gets caught until he's no longer lucky.
Yeah, he's lucky till he ain't.
There's the I do like going in and like looking at again some of the cast stuff. I think I've talked before about people who obviously wrote their own Wikipedia page, it seemed very important for everyone in the cast of this movie, especially the people whose like maybe acting careers dried up a little bit in recentish years, to have a lot of like information about the charity work that they're doing listed down below, which great for them. I mean, it's, I guess, better than the guy from the last Friday the 13th who wants you to know about his like one time he played jazz with somebody and he did a lot of finance work.
Yeah, you know, if you're gonna, I guess, toot your own horn, at least have it be something worthwhile, right?
Yeah. Just donating money to Chick-fil-A.
That great clause.
Yeah, y'all know what to do with it. Pretty well. But yeah, let's dive into this one. Our Friday the 13th ones tend to go a little bit long, so I think I don't want to belabor the production point too much longer.
And you probably already talked about some of these movies anyway, so.
So we get the movie starts with our Friday the 13th part one wrap up. That's like what, a minute and a half interspersed in the credits of,
yeah, it's real fast. It looks very much like a fan made, I mean a good one, but that's about the one.
I think the thing that doesn't help it for me is like the font of the credits very much is like a porn parody font choice that they call it.
Right.
Did not spring for the good font package.
I'm listening. Friday the 13 inches.
Okay. No, Friday the 13 inches. It's all of them, actually. I think you just
see something.
Friday the 13th in my butt. No, okay. Yeah, the Wellstruck. But we get the abridged version of Friday the 13th part one. We have our final girl. It's set in 1980. So I'm guessing Jason's a kid in this one. So like, unlike the first one, maybe the revenge doesn't take place over 23 years. So it's maybe a little closer.
I'm not convinced that the kid in the opening here is Jason. I think it might just be some random kid.
I think you do see like pictures of kid Jason later. So it would be a hell of a coincidence.
You know what? I don't know. You don't see enough of this guy to really say, oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, that is something I probably should mention, is that there are multiple cuts of this movie. Oh. I have the DVD that's the killer cut that has about an extra 7 minutes total. It's just mostly just gorier kills and more titties. But yeah,
I think they could do more.
I don't think anybody should be pressured into doing a nude scene. I think that the way that people were pushed into that, especially in the 70s and 80s when they were most prevalent, is gross. I also like seeing titties in movies though, and like it's call me Roger Corman.
I am not going to complain about seeing boobs. I mean, if you've seen one pair, you want to see the rest, right?
Just that you have something to compare it to, just for your notes.
Yeah. I mean, every guy's got, they're making a ranking constantly.
Right? You know, right? And ladies, right? Not every guy.
I'm not alone in this.
We have a chart going. We have a hold on. I just met somebody new. I need to go back home and update my whiteboard. But it's interesting because I think this is maybe like the last hurrah of this, because not that you don't see nudity in movies anymore, but I think most of the nudity you see in movies nowadays, like, it has to justify itself for some dumb fucking reason.
Right.
I mean, I want to go on the record. Like, I also, again, not just recognizing how people were talked into doing that, or like what the motivation was, whatever. That's like the most dismissive thing I've ever seen. Whatever. I also think there should be equal opportunity. I think there should be some dangling balls. It's too, you know.
You gotta hang some dong too.
Just some balls hanging out for the ladies to look.
That's what they
like. Yeah, they like that as much as most guys like boobs, right? Just a nut sack, nothing else.
That general globular shape is just universally appealing.
Yeah. The little tiny beanbag chair.
I think most guys would also, you know, if they're a heart of hearts, really look deep and admit it. They're into it too.
So yeah, we get the final girl killing off Pam Voorhees, and her locket drops, and a young Jason finds it, and then we have a jump cut to present day, present 2009 day, mm-hmm. where we have a group of five young adults who are trying to find a lost field of weed, legendary weed farm.
Was it just the two people who were trying to find it? I didn't get the sense that anyone beyond those two was really knew what they were looking for, or that they were out there looking for anything.
Yeah, I think that's like the purpose of the camping trip, and the other three folks are like, "Oh, you all are going camping. Like, let's go have a good time."
I don't want to spend a lot of time examining this because it doesn't matter.
But I mean, this exquisite character work. I don't know what you're talking about. So we've got the one who kind of matters most out of this group is Whitney, who is there with her boyfriend Mike, and she has been taking care of her sick mother, and this is like a break for her to finally get away and do something fun, and go get some exposition and do a Friday the 13th tradition of like, what's more romantic than looking through dilapidated cabins full of garbage where a murder might have taken place, or several.
It works for me.
We also have our leaders of this expedition. We have Richie and Wade. So kind of a smartass and a know-it-all combo, you know, two great stock characters from
Friday the 13th tradition.
Richie's is Ben Feldman, Jonah from Superstore, if you know that show. So he's the fast talking guy who's making fun of his friend, who's like probably the most excited about the weed out there. He's like a know-it-all. He's like got right. GPS signal. They tell the story. They tell they do their due diligence, paying homage to Friday the 13th Part 2. And I do appreciate that they just kind of sidestep the whole like zombie mongrel man question of just Jason came back. Where did he come back from? Doesn't not important. It doesn't matter.
He took some time abroad.
I think the thing I was convinced of when I was little is that I thought he was a zombie, but I thought he was a zombie who like aged. Like,
I mean, it makes was a dead kid. Anything else.
And that might be kind of where this movie's going to.
I can kind of like, I don't know. To me, he's dead and he's back for vengeance. I can understand and even see the argument for he never died in the first place. And
yeah,
but I don't know. That's a hard pill for me to swallow.
I mean, Crystal Lake cops have never been shown to be a strong investigative force.
That's true. I feel like if he was still around when his mom was trying to get vengeance, like close enough to see her, that he probably would have reconnected with her.
But still, he's a little boy that grows up. I feel like zombies just stop. Amanda is the last member of our group, and she is the girl who's got the hots for Richie, who's behind his back, with the first of a few different nude scenes in this movie. I mean, just putting baby oil on him like you do
around a campfire. Yes, that's every camping trip I took when I was young ended in some form or fashion like that.
Yeah, it was usually my Uncle Greg, but it's...
Yeah. I mean, gratuitous is not a strong enough word, I think, for a lot of this movie.
This actress, America Oliva, I do appreciate that she has... Her IMDb page has four prior credits to this movie, where her character's name in the credits is Beautiful Girl.
I mean, if you're going to get typecast.
Much worse ways.
Right.
So our group splits up. We've got Mike and Whitney going off to, you know, make out in the woods, but make out in the woods actually means explore the creepy cabins and do some expositioning. Our other couple that goes into the tent and they start having sex, Richie and Amanda. So Wade's on his own. They drop some money for the music in this movie. He's listening to Sister Christian.
Yeah, I kind of dug it.
It's not listening to Alice Cooper or like, you know, somebody's cousin's band, but they
or like something that someone in 2009 would have been listening to.
I mean, I think a lot of younger people listen to classic rock, at least in my experience, maybe like more so than the stuff we listen to when we were that age. Like, it's, maybe. I don't know. I don't think it's that far fetched to me that that character's
listening. I liked it. I don't want to tell you that I didn't like it. I liked it.
Yeah. But like, there's also a lot of other needle drops in this movie of like contemporary, there's like a Santa Gold song. There's a like a Hive song, so like they from a series that kind of is not really known for the soundtrack needle drop like thing. Yeah. That's kind of interesting. My favorite is that they have the slow jam romance song "My Favorite Book" by Stars in this movie. Which let's get a little sample of that real quick. Just Alice, please, lady. Real terrifying and scarifying.
I don't know how well that one plays, Josh.
Yeah, our record with playing music on the show has been spotty at best. I will keep trying to make these bits land though. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's, I guess to get that Michael Bay. That polish, he wants more boobs in it, which sounds pretty Michael Bay-ish. Yeah. spend some money on that soundtrack. But let's talk about our first pick. That Wade finds the weed, and then he gets accosted by our good friend Jason, which they cut away from, but they do come back and show you what happened to him. He gets a machete and it like chops his ear off and chops into his head.
Sure. I mean, yeah, this, why not?
Maybe one thing I want to talk about too is like, this is kind of a meaner Jason. This is,
you know what? I did make a note, you know, kind of towards the end of this opening sequence here, I was like, oh, this is the mean Jason I was kind of looking for.
Yeah, there's less like somebody just getting a poke in the tummy and going like,
yeah, because that has been a consistent complaint of mine, is that the kills are just kind of very limp in most of the kills in most of the movies have been pretty anticlimactic.
And I think the meanest one is coming up here, because we have Richie and Amanda are in their tent. They split up because they hear a noise, and Richie goes and finds Wade's body. And Jason gets Amanda, which, you know, you haven't seen the good sleeping bag kill from part 7 yet, but that's a iconic Friday the 13th thing to get somebody in their sleeping bag. But instead of just a bash or like a stab, he hangs her over a fire and cooks her alive, which is the second time that's happened in a movie that we watched. It was also in Mandy.
It was Mandy, yes. It definitely reminded me of Mandy. It's a brutal way to go.
I was curious about that, just because it's like, you know, you mentioned that he's like, it's kind of catching up with your expectation. I think that's kind of why I wanted to do this one, is that, mm-hmm. that I think this is the only one in the series where it feels like Jason maybe like saw a Saw movie and was just like, oh.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sold on the idea of him having like a Viet Cong-esque compound created under the ground of the campground of Crystal Lake.
We were getting there.
I like the idea of this being a Jason who has been living off the land, so maybe has a little bit of like woodcraft, like he knows a little bit about traps and things. He uses some bear traps and some tripwires and things like that. I kind of think that's in his wheelhouse.
Again, like I think especially if you're like consciously trying to put some distance between this movie and your Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Having kind of like the murder house full of like detritus.
Yeah. I mean,
that's kind of creates some overlap.
Maybe because they had success, you know, you go back to the well, just make every movie Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
So Richie comes back to see this and he gets caught in the aforementioned bear trap. And then we cut back to our couple that's exploring the house. They're finding like Jason's bed. They've found his cabin. They found Camp Crystal Lake. They're seeing this, you know, all his compound tools and stuff. Again, Mike's just very much like not picking up the signals, like, hey, this was kind of a fun little adventure, but now that we've found some really creepy stuff, I'd like to leave. Oh, no, babe. No.
No, but look in
here. Why don't we poke around? What about this, though? I was a little sad that with all the throwbacks and references to the other movies that we didn't get a cut to the toilet music stand. Jason poops, dun dun dun.
That's the next movie. That's the subtitle for the next movie.
But the thing that finally freaks them out enough where Mike wants to leave, unfortunately it's too late, as they find his mom, they find Pamela's head in the bathtub. But yeah. By this point, Jason's come back and he's under the house in his aforementioned Viet Cong tunnels, stabbing up. Again, like you, I think in another Friday the 13th movie, there's like maybe two stabs up through the floor, not the like
right.
seven that we get here.
No, I like this because even though it is just, you know, we've seen him stab through things to stab people, but yeah. This has a little bit. It's just a little meaner. Like they let it happen just long enough that you're like, oh shit, this fucking sucks. You know, like you see it coming and there's nothing you can do to get out of the way of it.
Yeah, he gets him the once, and then all of a sudden his mobility is limited, and then. Mm-hmm. Pulls him down into the tunnel, and Whitney goes running. She finds Richie before they can try to put together an escape. Jason's already there. Jason gets Richie with a machete to the head. The effect here, there's not a lot of digital effects in this movie, but they did create like a little like sag on the face as the nerves went dead.
Oh, sure.
For Richie.
I don't know if I caught that.
Again, that's a killer cut versus regular cut difference. Were you making like I know like we both worked in Blockbuster, but like DVD extra scenes features guy, did you ever like get into that stuff? Or
it depended on how much I liked the movie. I much preferred it if it was like a director's cut sort of thing where it was added back in.
Yeah,
it felt a little bit like work to have to go back and look at it after the fact, like go back through a menu and oh, this scene, I remember this scene.
Here's it from a slightly different angle. Yeah. I was reminded recently of the like when DVDs first came out, that there was like the angle button where you could like, let's look at the other camera they had set up that nobody like actually cared about or used at all.
Right.
But yeah, then you think Whitney is getting got, but that it's our jump to the title sequence. 25 minutes in, we get our title drop. Man, Jason has to have some pretty good breaks because he is like 240 pounds of pure muscle machete swing down onto Whitney before he like later on you realize she's still around.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we do like. Find out later on that she did not die. I have no idea how she did die because it looked like he killed her.
It's yeah, and like basically why you find out is that they found that the amulet that Jason picked up that has both his picture and his mother's picture in it, and that Whitney looks like Mrs. Voorhees.
Amulet is so a very Dungeons and Dragons term, my man. I think we call it a locket.
I'm sorry that I own a thesaurus.
I just don't want to lose the audience.
If they find out like 76 episodes, I'm like, wait a minute, one of these guys is a fucking nerd.
It's never too late to find out. All right, you got to be careful all the time. Keep your guard up.
Did you appreciate in Jason's like survivalist murder house too that he has like a Margaret White level of candles? It's really about creating ambiance.
I mean, it seems a lot more lived in of a space than I would have expected for a murder hobo.
And that could also just be like one of these movies had a production team and the other one didn't, but the part two shack did definitely more feel like maybe just a shack where a corpse hangs out as opposed to a place where somebody lives.
Or a feral special needs person.
But we meet our main cast after this title drop. We've got the one person who's related to our prior cast. We've got Jerry Padalecki, his Clay.
Jerry, that's the level you're on with him.
Jared maybe just didn't come through, but you know, yes, I am. When I had him on the Drew Barrymore show recently, and we were discussing his Jerry stint in Walker. it's awesome. Up until recently, they let me write all my own jokes, but but something changed. I don't know. But he's kind of filling the Rob Dyer role from Final Chapter. He's out looking for his sister who got by a Jason.
I think that this works pretty damn perfectly. I have no complaints about this addition or this little wrinkle to the story.
Were you upset that he didn't loudly announce that he was dying? please stop Jason from killing me. Why haven't you stopped him yet? This hurts really bad.
That is a callback that I wish they had in here because, wow. In the original, he really let you know that he did not enjoy getting stabbed by Jason.
Which I feel a lot like. I feel like I would also just be like, why did you do that? That's terrible.
I don't like this. Please don't.
He meets in a general goods store gas station as he's passing out missing flyers for his missing sister. The rest of our main cast, a frat bro, Trent, and his in grand Friday the 13th tradition, group of friends who, like, why is he friends with some of these people?
I mean, especially, like, it even calls it out in the movie itself a little bit later on. It's like, why did you invite these people out here if you don't want them to do anything?
Yeah, a party weekend at his dad's cabin, but he doesn't want like any partying to take place.
Use the coasters, guys. That's what they're there for.
But he's from a long line of Friday the 13th assholes. Very, very frat bro-y, and spoiler, like they keep him around for a really long time just to build up that hate. So eventually his death hopefully is the one that you get the most yah-yahs from.
He was a dick, but I could kind of see his point.
Yeah, you know, right? Didn't want to be the one to say it. Yeah, they are fucking up his dad's place. And no, I don't want to drink beer from your fucking shoe, man.
Right. Like, that fucking chair was an antique. Have some respect.
Team Trent. Trent did nothing wrong. Changed my mind. He is there with his girlfriend, Jenna, Danielle Panabaker, the aforementioned Killer Frost, who's kind of our traditional Friday the 13th heroine. She's the good girl who resists all the offers of drugs and sex and wants to do right by...
She has Final Girl written all over her.
Yeah. The one guy who does make sense for Trent to be hanging out with, Nolan, Ryan Hansen, from Party Down and Veronica Mars, is, tossing off equal frat bro vibes, there with his girlfriend, who's played by, Willa Ford, who's kind of a third tier Britney Spears from the era playing Chelsea.
Okay.
Those are the ones that kind of make some sense. You also got Bree, like the other hot girl, who of course is there to be the what if his girlfriend's not interested in sex?
Somebody's got to get some.
Yeah. But then you've got the other two guys that he's brought with him.
Yeah, the diversity hires.
Yeah, the ones who don't fit in with the rest of the cast for reasons.
At all.
Oh, yeah. Lawrence might be the in, because I could see Lawrence being like, he's an athletic guy. He talks about how fast he is and not getting caught and stuff. And he's like, but he's also like the cool jock dweeb, because he brings along Chewy. So they're our stoner geek guys. Lawrence later on, man, like, don't get me wrong. Like, I love, you know, self-pleasure and all, but like, if you're just like in somebody's house and your friend just was like, I'm going to go out to the tool shed real quick, like, maybe pause before you get out, like, the magazine and get your pants off.
No, I mean, yes, but also it was just like a winter clothing magazine. It was not a titillating publication whatsoever. He's like, it's time to masturbate. They left me alone for more than a minute. I got to get this done.
This is like set in modern times. This is set in 2009, so it's not like he doesn't have to like work with what us like 80s and 90s kids.
he's in the digital age. He doesn't have to work analog anymore. Jesus Christ.
He doesn't have to like surf around through the TV and just like, well, I guess Married with Children's on, because that'll do.
Through that static, I think I can see a. Is that an elbow or a nipple? I don't know. Close enough.
We're going to bet on nipple. And then there's a, like, you mentioned him, but just Chewy, I just want to call out to. Not too different from other characters in this mold in the series, but I do like this. I think this actor does a pretty good job with this role, this Aaron Yu. We'll get into it, like, especially during his death scene, kind of. What I think he brings to the table a bit here. But he's like insufferable, but I think at least like charmingly kind of insufferable. Unlike maybe a Ned from part one.
All right, yeah.
So they are our main characters collide in a gas station because the guy handing out flyers looking for his missing sisters taking too long. Some of us got places to go, bro.
Just fucking yapping, just up here yapping at the counter. We got beer to buy, bro.
I do appreciate if the other movies are very Frozen and Amber 1980s, each particular year, like what bad fashion looked like. The 2009 version of that also does not disappoint. There's a lot of floppy hair. Screw.
Yeah, there is. I don't even feel qualified to comment on it because I've never been accused of being fashionable myself. But there's definitely something going on here.
Yeah. So we get a little bit too of the snapshot of the other folks in Crystal Lake. There's like the sheriff that Clay talks to. He goes to talk to a couple people at their homes. There's also this gas station attendant. What is your vibe on Crystal Lake? It's
residents in this movie. Yeah, honestly, I felt like the police force had its people's best interests at heart. Like he came and pulled him over, and you think, oh, this is gonna be a cop giving him a hard time, blah blah blah. And he really just seemed like, man, we did all we could, and we. We put all our best men on the job, and I just think you're gearing yourself up for a lot of heartache that you don't need, son.
Yeah. There's also like, you know, the one woman he goes to go talk to is like, we get a jump scare with a snarling dog. Right. Like, oh, your sister's not missing. She's dead. Because when folks go missing around here, he gets them. And like, I don't know, maybe that's something that should be also on the police's radar a little bit.
Yeah, if everyone knows that somebody's killing somebody, maybe that should be a little more on your radar.
You know, he's really good at growing weed, though. He's out there with you think the, that's the what, hydroponics. That's what
kicked this whole thing off is he didn't want people finding his crop.
Get Rasta, Jason.
With one of those hats, the multicolored red, yellow, green hats. Dreadlocks.
if you want to buy weed from him, like, you have to go silently play Tekken with him for a while. And like, just don't piss him off, man. He's going to kill you. Just let him win. It's okay. Just get out of here with everyone.
Thanks. Yeah.
They spend some more time with Clay going around, and the last guy that he talks to, a yokel working at somebody else's barn before he goes back to his barn. Is this a two barn?
Yeah, it's a multi barn scenario, or at least a multi level barn scenario. I'm not sure exactly. But we get our first glimpse of Chekhov's wood chipper.
Yeah, with our slack-jawed yokel here, who also uses analog technology to jerk off with and is licking it.
we've all been.
Tries to sell the guy who's looking for his missing sister weed, but.
So are we to believe that this was his weed from the beginning?
He said he found it. So I think he found Jason's stash, and Jason's just like, oh, no. friend.
it meets established precedent here, so that's fine. Yeah. No notes.
The Sadie's style thing. Like, do these characters also have like plug-in vibrators? Is that what's going on here? Do they go to down to the peep show and like run the Nickelodeon and hand crank it?
And I was gonna say they're operated by hand crank. You gotta stores up a small charge for a little bit of usage time, but
there's also like a reunion before this guy gets got of our main cast folks as Clay's passing out his materials and finds this group that he's already interacted with, and Jenna invites him in, which again, like, Trent's an ass, but like, is when your girlfriend's like, you already had like a fight with this guy and she's like, oh, I invited him in, we're gonna feed him and give him something to drink, but no.
So maybe have a little bit of tact, a little bit of awareness.
But this our guy gets got, our guy in the barn, is smoking a J and thinking about going to have sex with a mannequin.
Yeah, barn mannequin anyway. Who apparently took his virginity.
Yeah, it's a it's a Friday the 13th movie. It's sure. Before
you'll get no argument from me, it is definitely a Friday the 13th movie.
Jason shows up. What I should mention is that Jason's been Backhead Jason, so there's again that part two vibe going on. He's got like, it's not really the same. He doesn't have the like the full-on potato sack that he has in part two. It's more like a dark man situation.
Yeah, I can't tell if it's bandages or if there's actually like a bag situation going on. I don't know.
But we get to see the makeup here. We get to see Jason gets that cut off of him during the struggle, and the guy says it's not right. This was based very much on his look from parts one and part four. Curious what you think of our Jason in this one. What do you think of Jason Derek Mears' portrayal of our beloved killer?
That's flawless.
I got no, like, I also, like, spoilers, I'll take off my rose colored glass at some point. I have some issue with this movie, but like, I think the Jason stuff is fine. Like, I would have been cool to keep having like Kane Hodder do it and have it be like his signature character. Yeah, great. But like, Derek Mears has a physical presence. He's a stuntman who's been like working forever in a million things, still works on like a billion things. He's just one of those guys that like anytime you see that he's showing up at a convention or anybody that's worked with him or done any projects with him are like thrilled for him that he got to be Jason, because apparently he loves it and he's like one of the nicest guys in Hollywood. So
yeah,
I think he does some good work here. He does what's required of him in a physical only role.
No, I think there's very little to complain about as far as the physical performance and the way that things kind of look. I think it all kind of works.
he carries himself, like, and he's also, like, got real fighting experience. So, like, mm-hmm. later on when there's actual fight scenes, like, he looks believable dodging hammer swings and stuff.
Yeah.
With the music, we don't get a lot of we get that soundtrack, but we don't get the kikikimamamas except for just a real brief hint, because after Jason gets his bandages cut off, he finds in this barn his hockey mask. And
yeah, it's real subtle. It's like a really, really understated.
Not key lighted and lit up, and then he like has a fashion montage sequence in front of him.
Right.
So back in our party house, as Trent's telling everybody, hey, stop partying. We got a couple folks decide to break away. Nolan and Chelsea decide they're going to go take the truck into town, and they're told to go gas up the boat, but don't drive the boat. So, of course, what does it say about him? That as soon as he said, don't drive that boat, you knew I was going to drive that boat. Yeah. I wish we had more Ryan Hansen in this movie, and maybe that's just like knowing what he can do in other parts and like how charming he can be, but you don't get a lot of
I feel like most of the the young adults in this movie don't get a lot of time to really breathe in their parts. They're
meat for the grinder.
Yeah, they're very caricature-ish for the most part.
He's the broest of the, you know, he's the other end of the frat spectrum from Trent. Trent's the uptight. My dad is
owns a dealer.
The most important. You know, then our good friend Nolan's just getting by on vibes only. And he and his girlfriend go to do some topless wakeboarding, baby, cruising around the lake, jamming out to the Hives.
Super good.
I do feel a little bit for like Willa Ford, just like, okay, the singing thing didn't work out. I'm gonna try my hand at acting. This part has some demands. especially like I like her death, but man, it is a her death is very gratuitous.
I have the same opinion. I think it's a really fun death.
Yeah.
But it is also like, oh, one more time for the boobs.
But she gets got second. Our first victim is Nolan, who's driving a speedboat like at speed, fast enough to ditch Chelsea, ditch his girlfriend, and Jason just, you know, no scope headshot from the shore.
This is a man who has grown up in the wild. He's honed his skills over years.
He's got his boxing glove arrow. He's
right.
He's bombing. One of the other, again, like very few digital effects in this movie is kind of the pop between the arrow and the practical effect of it. But the boat's at speed, it's coming back, it clocks Chelsea in the water.
Yeah.
And I really like the alternate here for what her death was supposed to be. I like her death too, but the initial idea was supposed to be that she's out in the water. She's got like a concussion or she's got like a massive head wound. Mm-hmm. And every time she starts to go towards the shore, Jason's just at the shore and he's keeping pace with her. So she has to keep like going back out into the water.
Yeah.
And the idea was that they were going to do like a bunch of other scenes back at the house and then come back and it's nighttime and she's like eventually just gets tired out and drowns.
I kind of thought that was the way they were going initially, which I think is just, that's real mean. it's mean in a way that I appreciate, but it is a real mean way to kill somebody.
Yeah, and it's not really, I don't know, it's a cool death, and if it was like another character doing it, I'd feel a little different about it, but like that's not Jason's thing, right? Yeah. Like it feels like un-Jason like to really just like, oh, this is gonna take hours, motherfucker.
Well, I mean, he would have done it faster, but she kept swimming back out.
He doesn't like the water. That's like, again, and I do love in quotes here that one of the plot points of Freddy versus Jason is that Jason is scared of the water. And in the limited Friday the 13th films that you've seen, does that seem to be the case? Jason seemed to be real afraid of getting his toes wet.
I I feel like it should be the case, but given what I've seen, not at all. Like, it would make sense if that were the case.
Chelsea's gratuitous death. She swims underneath a dock and comes up, and Jason comes on.
Say goodbye to these moment.
And she's doing some, you know, some loud panicked breathing, but she thinks that she's successfully hidden from him before the machete comes in through the dock into the top of her head. And as Jason pulls the machete out, she rises up out of the water. So we get one more final jiggle.
Yeah.
before she goes to go meet St. Peter and her has to explain how she died. Jason's compound, like, he's got that, like, alarm system, too. Like, a generator? He comes back and he's got a generator?
Yeah. It's, because it's probably my biggest complaint is I don't know what they're trying to establish here, because he just has it.
So there's a couple different things going on, like, between edits here, where you've got our kill scene, and we've also got the young adults partying back at the party house, and Jenna has decided to accompany Clay and go looking for his sister, and they also find Camp Crystal Lake. So we have, like, some interspersing cuts back and forth between that. So when they find this place and know that something's up, Jason's getting back at the same time. Yeah. Back at the party house, they're doing, like, the beer pong, and again, Trent will abide by the rules of the game, which means he's not going to drink beer out of Chewie's shoe that he's not wearing socks in. So Chewie drinks it himself. I just want to call out that he has this thing he says about to, like, all the, like, welching, squelching, felching.
I mean, sometimes you just got to make a rhyme.
It threw me off enough that I'm like, well, wait, like, is there another definition that I don't know? And there's not. When I looked it up, I do want to say, anybody out there who's, like, thinking about doing some postgraduate work and you want to work on your doctorate, the National Institute of Health does say that virtually nothing has been written in academic literature about the practice of felching. So look up what felching is, and then decide whether you want to write your dissertation on it. And
you're saying this is like an untapped vein.
Exactly. And there's not a lot of those in academia. You've got to, like, really seize on it and, like, get in front of a council and present your findings. Probably, like, a, I don't know, 75-page treatise. A lot of charts. A lot of pictographs.
Honestly, it only makes sense.
So they Jenna and Clay encounter Jason. Jason knows they're there and searching for them, but they at least see enough that they know he's got a body with him.
Yeah.
But they escape.
Whose body back to he had?
Either Nolan or Chelsea. I guess maybe it's the dude, the redneck guy, because I think it's a headless body.
Yeah.
But maybe, like, Jason.
That's where I was thinking, is that he took that redneck as a trophy, because it would have been difficult for him to get. Well, I don't know. Depends on where the boat ended up for Nolan.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he could have. Yeah. See, he didn't cut her head off.
Great would it have been for, like, the rest of the movie? There was just, like, in the background, a speedboat doing, like, donuts.
You know what? Fucking, I would have loved it. And you just have him going, I fucking told him not to take my boat. Those assholes.
So I'm going to figure out here which version you saw, whether you saw the killer cut or you saw the original one. In your version, did Whitney escape?
Did she escape? She did not
escape. Did she pick a lock and run out into the night?
She attempted to pick a lock. He caught her before she finished picking a lock.
Okay. That's one of the differences. That's, like, basically, other than gore and more boobs, there is a sequence in the middle where Whitney gets out and she makes it all the way to the house, and she sees Bree and Trent having sex before Jason appears behind her and snags her before she can do anything. So that's what you missed out on. And I don't know if that is no final judgments yet, but take that into account.
that just seems unnecessary.
But, you know, Whitney picks the lock in that one with the piece from the GPS that her brother had, because Jason finds the backpack, so he knows somebody's been around.
Yeah.
And Whitney, the master of unlocking, uses that to get out in the killer cut version. Back at the party house, I know, spoilers, I did this out of order, but Bree is going to end up having sex with to console Trent. And, you know, I think her character trait is that she videos things. She has a camera and she's filming stuff.
Sure. That's been firmly established in the lore.
Another Chewie line I maybe don't understand is he says he has a better shot at fucking the Penguin than Bree, and I'm just wondering if he knows Danny DeVito, if Burgess Meredith.
Who else would have been it would have been those two at that point, right?
Okay, now that you've just brought in Colin Farrell into the equation, it's not a joke anymore. It's like a goal, right? That's
right. Yeah. No. Yeah. Definitely put it on your bucket list.
So he's got some weird line reads, and he's it's kind of an annoying character. And it's not just because he has the same name as my dog that I like him, but I think Aaron Yu has fun with this. And after he breaks a table, he goes out to the tool shed and does a little bit of solo work in Grand Friday the 13th tradition, making jokes to himself. The only way this could be more Friday the 13th is if he started doing vaudeville impressions. See? He had to have emergency stomach surgery while he was making this movie. So his whole death scene, he filmed while he had 30 staples holding his guts together. Damn, and was insisting on stunts and being thrown around.
That may not be the smartest call, but respect.
Yeah, there's respect to him. He also, Jason encounters him. He's got a hockey stick he's fucking around with and has broken a leg and is cleaning up. And he's also high, so he's trying to give Jason the hockey stick, little humor, little jokey joke.
It's your outfit. Yeah.
He also gets another very mean death. He gets this, after a struggle, he gets stabbed in under the jaw with a screwdriver, but it's not a... It's a lot of struggle.
Other than the sleeping bag death at the beginning, I think this may be the meanest death in the movie because it takes so long. You know, he felt every centimeter of that screwdriver entering his.
Yeah, and again, I like the performance a lot here because Aaron, you also sells it by he had the blood capsule in his mouth, and as he was doing the death scene. He swallowed the blood capsule to get it into his sinuses so it would spray out of his nose. It's some commitment to not a pleasant sensation.
It's commitment and it's research and it's just fucking professionalism is what it is.
But you mentioned it at the top because I thought maybe you would go here with the nickname because I think it's maybe... The line reading that people remember from this movie is from the Trent Bree sex scene. Once she takes off her shirt, Trent begins a running commentary about her boobs. It's like five or six lines.
Yeah. No, there's some <They're> tens.
Perfect nipple placement.
Yeah.
Just a thing human beings say.
I would honestly. If they just had that as an extra feature of just them feeding him lines to say here, Seth Rogen type movie. What is the director who does all those?
Judd Apatow.
Judd Apatow. Yeah. Just feed a whole bunch of different line reads. And I would love to hear some of the bloopers, the outtakes from.
They have Scott Aukerman come and punch it up.
Perfectly balanced.
I think this is also kind of where Whitney would have gotten to. I do like geography in movies a lot. I don't get where things are supposed to be, how far away or how not far away anything in this movie is. How close is he to the town?
Yeah, it seems like the camp is in the backyard of this ski lodge that they're staying at on the lake.
And the finale takes place in the barn from the beginning, but it's right after they escape the tunnels. So it's oh, is this was that barn just directly out there and nobody ever
how elaborate is this tunnel system he's dug?
We get a our main characters are our hero and our heroine. We got Clay and Jenna. They come back and they warn everybody that there's a killer out there. And Lawrence, good friend, he might have just been about to, like, you know, jerk off to a Sears catalog a moment before, but he's going to spring into action. He grabs a wok as a shield and goes out to investigate the tool shed. And finds, again, a grand Friday the 13th tradition, a spring-loaded body. It just... okay, as soon as somebody gets underneath it. again, another, like, out-of-character Jason thing with this. It's mean, and it's a neat idea, and it's kind of cool, but it's also, like, he hits Lawrence in the back with the axe that he threw, and then does the full metal jacket using them as bait.
Right, yeah, no, you don't normally think of him as being, like, putting that much forethought into it. He finishes the job.
And it doesn't take him long. He does go up, and after the axe is, like, buried in the back and Lawrence is still alive, when he realizes they're not coming out, he just flips him over and pushes it all the way through. Throws him on the ground and other side.
If you wanted to be generous here, you could say that, you know, because Lawrence is so fast, he got quite far away from Jason before Jason threw that thing.
Yeah.
So that time delay could be accounted for, you know, just him catching up to where he got to.
And this is a running Jason. It's not a teleporting Jason. It's this Jason gets a bit physical.
The Jason that would be in 28 Days Later.
Maybe the most senseless of our deaths here is, of course, after everybody sees this, somebody calls the police, which is, you know, I don't always agree that's the best call in every situation, but in a rampant Jason attack, you use your lifeline, your resources. Bree just decides to go, like, exploring rooms, just go find yourself.
Yeah.
Trent goes and gets his dad's gun. Bree gets, like, 4 deaths. She gets, like, choked out, impaled on the antlers, shot through the door and thrown out the window. Just, man, if you want to make the read of morality tale for the character who sleeps with somebody who has a girlfriend.
Right.
Oh boy.
I mean, yeah, no, you're right. It didn't occur to me while watching it, but now that you're listing back at everything that happens to her, she gets, I think the only film character I can think of that's treated worse is John Malkovich from Con Air, Cyrus the Virus. He goes through a lot of killing.
Her body shows up in the barn at the end and gets, like, another one. Just a Weekend at Bernie's style, moving around.
I'm into it.
The police do show up. The cop shows, and this might be my favorite kill in the movie. I think this is a pretty cool little bit of filmmaking here. I think it's pretty. Jason jumps down as he's knocking at the door and shoves the fire poker through his eye and through the eye hole that the other characters are looking out of.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's
neat little gag.
Yeah. Poker still had the eye attached to it too, so it's...
So of course now just our assholes left to kill, right? Nobody else is gonna die. You got the final girl, the final guy, and then our captive sister that we know about, who's maybe like on the fence, right? Maybe she makes, maybe she doesn't. Our asshole gets caught. Do you think he gets the death he deserved? Do you think he gets the
I think if we go by your theory that they're really kind of playing him up to that you wanted to see that super satisfying death, then no, he absolutely does not.
I do like that there's, like, a third party involved. I like that the tow truck shows up or is driving by that he's trying to flag down. He gets the machete put all the way through him and then, like, lifted up by the machete like it's a handle.
Yeah.
And then his body sags down, and then he gets thrown onto, like, the lift gate, like, impaled on that.
Yeah, it's like a tow truck that just has the tow part of it stuck up. Yeah.
Yeah, like
I do kind of blame the tow truck driver for this death a little bit, because could he have been any more suspicious? With the, like, you almost hit this kid, and then you're just like, no, I'm going to wait for him to come up to the, I'm not going to talk.
I thought you were going to say that you blamed him because he had left like the tow piece up, like he hadn't watched the training video, the safety video.
if you really want to go there, this is why they make you watch those videos.
Do you think he showed back up like at the impound lot and just like, we gotta clean the truck a little bit. something happened. Took it through the car wash.
Yeah, I don't know how you explain that to people.
Never addressed. Not important. We're in the climax of the movie. Our hero and heroine go back to free the sister. They go back to Jason's murder compound, and they're able to get her out. They're fleeing out through the system. They got a little cat and mouse game going on here. Jason's chasing them down. They're fleeing. They all go find like a dead end, and they come out the dead end. And as Jenna's climbing out, she gets run through with a machete. She is not our final girl.
This was genuinely surprising. I kind of like the playing with the expectations that they did here.
Real psycho moment? Is that, I was wondering if this was going to work on you at all, if you were expecting that or not, or thought she was going to make it out with our good pal, Jerry Padalecki. Jerry.
Definitely positioned her as final girl material.
Yeah, that's the... I think they don't do a lot to subvert expectations in this movie, but I think that is a genuinely shocking moment. I know I was not expecting it either. I thought like that was just going to be part of another thrilling sequence, and not when the machete came out of her. I'm just like, that seems hard to live through.
That's a botch, right? That's a reshoot.
You fucked up. So I also like the for a movie that I think has some weird set design choices that make it a little Texas Chainsaw. I like the school bus sequence. I like that one of the tunnels, like, why is that turned over abandoned school bus here? That raises some questions. I think that's like maybe the good kind of creepy of like.
It is at least interesting, you know, even if it doesn't. Yeah. If even like you think about it, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It is at least interesting.
Do you think the people of Crystal Lake was just like, man, that school bus full of kids went missing. If I didn't have the sticky icky to console me, I would be real bummed out about that.
I think that the the grow up there explains a lot.
But they have like a fight here, and again, this is kind of the more human Jason of the earlier Fred. So like, he's actually affected by things like, you know, getting kicked in the face and like hitting the limbs and stuff. He doesn't just shrug it off and laugh about it.
I still find him to like in this to be
it's tough.
Remarkably proficient in hand-to-hand combat.
He's, you know, it's like old boy. He practiced on a wall for a while. But it ends up back in this barn, and you had mentioned Chekhov's wood chipper, but after a struggle and we get like the fake out with the hanging with he gets the bear trap attached to him that's connected to the chain, and the chain gets thrown to the wood chipper and briefly hung, comes back from that, and then gets the back of his head all shredded up after getting stabbed by Whitney. She gets her tell your mother I said hello.
Yeah.
Do you think there was like the temptation to do the Mark Wahlberg line reading?
So how do you move for me?
I think one of the things that was a big director producer conflict was how to end this thing, because
I don't what they did.
Yeah. Do you want like what? So they do like the jump. They actually kind of during the final struggle too. They do the Friday the 13th part two. They do the Jason grabbing him through the window. Oh, I didn't keep up a defenestration count. Is that the only one? Can you think of more defenestration in this movie?
I think it's just the one. There's not a whole lot of. I mean, there's a lot of windows in the
like. But they're already the open, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he comes in through an open window. That's a missed opportunity. An open window. That's like, yeah. Jason should close it to smash it. Just lower it down. Like, can't make it too easy. But yeah, they throw his body in the water, throw his mask in the water, throw his machete in the water.
Sure. I don't really understand why they would do this other than, you know, oh, they wanted to have this last jump scare, because wouldn't you want to have evidence that this insane story that you're going to tell the authorities actually happened?
Yeah, not like, now there's going to be a lot of dead people, and what we know that what we're going to say is real far-fetched, but we had to just throw that body in the water. We couldn't look at it anymore. If you'd have seen him, he's real ugly, so we saved you a bad time.
Honestly, you should be thanking us.
But he immediately pops up through the dock and grabs Whitney, and that's our cut to credits.
Yeah, I feel like it's a missed opportunity. Like, I understand why they did it because of the way the first movie ends, but yeah. I feel like that sort of scene would have been better served like midway through the movie. Like, they show kind of like, oh, this is like that sort of situation, rather than try to shoehorn it in at the end when it makes objectively no sense for it to happen.
The original ending didn't really have anything, and honestly, like, he just, instead of getting in the back of his head shredded up, he just gets his neck broken.
Yeah.
And I think they always kind of had a placeholder, like, oh, we're going to do something else, but we don't know what else. They end up like reshooting it a few times. And I will agree that I think they could have either gone back to an earlier take or tried again.
I'm honestly thinking about it now. If they wanted that to be the ending, then there should not have been the wood chipper stuff in there at all. They should have ended up back on the lake, whether they were trying to escape from it or whatever. They should have just ended up back on the lake if they were going to.
Yeah, like kill him and he falls into the water or something, and then they have a conversation or watch the sunrise or something. And
yeah,
I don't know. Or maybe the headless panel of Voorhees comes to the
water. Sure. There are numerous things they could have done.
Yeah. Well, is there more stuff you want to get into before we get into our sales floor and Crispy and all that fun stuff that we do?
I think all the rest of it that I have is stuff that would be best served for the sales.
Okay. So my sales pitch on this one, and the reason I picked it out, I kind of mentioned it, is like I feel like one of the things that's frequently come up when we've talked about the Friday the 13th movies is like the comment of like, that's just how they did things back then, or that this is like a more modern interpretation or a meaner interpretation would be like this. And this was always sort of like a bit of a back pocket thing to like kind of talk through that aspect of it a little bit. This was a hit. It was sort of like, I don't know if you remember, like when like Insane Clown Posse albums would come out and like all their fans would rush and buy it, and it would be number one for a week, and then the next week it would just fall off a cliff.
Yeah,
that's kind of what happened with this one too. So it definitely made the money back. It turned like a pretty nice profit. It's like, I think 60-something million worldwide on like a less than $10 million budget.
I think for all of my griping about this series, I think that people were kind of hungry for it to come back into the mainstream a little bit. Like it's.
Yeah.
Even if I don't agree with it, it is like revered as a horror icon franchise.
Yeah, and I think what my sales pitch on this will be is that I think this is like, if you're looking at it not through my lens of everything Jason is wonderful because I love the character and I just want stuff to keep being made with Jason, it slots pretty well in that. Quality wise for the stuff that was coming out at the time. I think it's like, it's a C movie. It's fine. But I think it's like, sometimes a movie that's fine is okay. And I think this is for the stuff that does fumble with, I think there's some actors doing fun stuff with the archetype they're given. I think there's some cool stunts. I think the kills, while they feel out of character for Jason somewhat, some of that is made up for just by like how creative and mean they are, and if they were in a different series, they would feel more in place, and there'd be something that I think more people would celebrate. More people like, oh, that was a really cool kill with like the screwdriver from this other movie. But
yeah,
it's just that it's in a Friday the 13th movie. But I I don't regret watching this one. It's not near like the top of my list, but it's usually if I'm doing like a series rewatch, one that I'm like not looking forward to. It's perfectly fine. It's a TV cast of attractive people doing the kind of movie I like. And I'm wondering if that modern sensibility lands more for you than the 80s one. And I'm curious to hear what you have to say about it.
I feel like it does kind of the modern take on it, the modern sensibility, as you put it, definitely does like resonate with me a little bit more than watching the original. It's like I get a little fed up with the over reliance on tropes. And that was a complaint that I had in this movie, was that like all the characters are caricatures. They're not really actual people. And I understand that they did that because the originals were like that. But I think that if you're going to revisit, you need to be bringing something new to the table that isn't just hitting the same old notes that were played before. It's basically the same opinion I have when I hear like a cover song. I really like cover songs, but unless you're doing something new with the material, what are you doing? There's already a perfectly good one out there. So I think for me, the biggest problem I have with this movie, and I'm going to go ahead and say right now that this is not one that I'm going to buy, is it doesn't work if you don't know the previous movies. Like it doesn't stand on its own. Even though they try to condense and combine the plot lines from like the first four into one thing, like they only super, super briefly go into any sort of backstory about where Jason come from or why he's doing what he's doing. And like the reason that the kids are out there is just whatever. And it just feels like an excuse to have these kills happen rather than like a coherent sort of like plot structure. And I get that that's kind of Friday the 13th has been sort of that, but that's
the bread and butter.
I feel like they need to. I like this version of Jason. I think it's been established that I kind of like the Jason character just in general.
Yeah.
I don't feel like his movies have done him justice, and that has not changed.
I am sort of curious with the pedigree that the TV show that's coming out, the Crystal Lake TV show.
Yeah.
Like if they are, it just feels like a strange fit to me to be like, okay, there's 12 movies in this series. Now we're going to dig into like the real like character work. Like, we're going to take the A24 approach, and what Jason's really about is trauma.
But what other option do they really have though? I mean, you can't just make several seasons of a TV show where they just kill a bunch of people and nothing happens, and it's just like trophy characters.
Every episode has like 13 kills and
like a kill of the week sort of thing. I don't think that works. You have to have a little bit more if you're gonna stretch it like
that. Yeah, and I think the premise of the show is like it's the prequel before the events of the first movie, so presumably Pamela wasn't going on murder sprees before that. There was just the two that you see in the original movie and stuff, and then the poison well and whatever she was doing to fuck around at that camp for 20 something years. I'm sorry to hear that. Again, I will point out that 333, like if that you would lead a team during the season. I got a Crispin Glover award for acting excellence. That's just been moldering in this box. I've got like so many of them, really kind of bought them in bulk. Thought I would be losing money if I didn't. But I've got one here, and for me, this one's actually kind of close. I love the jokester character in these movies, even if it's the character that you do want to see off because they're not good at it and they're annoying.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I really do like Aaron Yu's performance here, but I got to give this to our second Jason that I've handed one to. And I think Derek Mears does a phenomenal job as Jason. And even if no matter where you land on this movie, I think just there's absolutely nothing wrong at all with his portrayal. And he brings a lot of physicality and fun to it. And I think it's kind of a bummer that he didn't that the rights issues and the fact that this movie made a lot of money and not all of the money kind of doomed the sequel that was supposed to come out, and left that spinning. And hopefully he gets another chance to do Jason, because he loves the character. So
if, like I said, no complaints about Jason. I think he was great. His version
was there anything you wanted to give a shout out to? Is there anything you've been enjoying in this this hiatus that we've had that you want to steer people towards?
No.
I'll mention one thing that I know you've been enjoying, and I've also been like enjoying, and I'm probably gonna go right back to it after we've been recording this.
All right, sure.
Is the new Zelda game, the Tears of the Kingdom. I say new, but it's been out for like several months, but I haven't touched it.
It's new this year, right?
Yeah. And it like the last one that got a lot of praise did not grab me. And I don't know what they changed about this one, because a lot of the mechanics are pretty much exactly the same, if not more fiddly and obtuse and in some ways frustrating. But it kind of captured that Zelda magic. So I don't know if you're like anyone out there is a fan of any of those games, like especially maybe the like Ocarina of Time and Link to the Past, or kind of my Majora's Mask are kind of my jams, but this kind of recaptured that feeling for me, and pretty lightning in a bottle sensation. I'm pretty far along in it, and I still feel like a sense of wonder at it.
I started playing it with my son, and then I told you that I was really enjoying it. So I think I appreciate that you took me seriously and gave it a shot. But it's at this point, like, my son has beaten it, and I've been slowly working my way through it, trying to avoid him telling me every single thing that you can do, because now that he's beaten it, he's still playing it, but he's also watching all the YouTube stuff, and he's learning how to do all the hidden stuff and the secrets and how to exploit certain things. And I'm like, look, I just want to play the game, dude. But yeah, I agree. It's Breath of the Wild did not do it for me. Like, I didn't dislike it, but it didn't grab me. Tears of the Kingdom, yeah, I think, is one of my favorite games.
I feel like the difference for me is I played, there's like a tutorial area in each game. And I feel like when I played the tutorial area of Breath of the Wild and I saw the scope of the world, I was just like, oh man, like, I don't want to do all that stuff I was just doing, like, in a world this big. Like, that's too much. And I feel like it was the exact opposite in Tears of the Kingdom, where, like, once I got out of the tutorial area, it was just like, I get to do all this stuff and, like, explore. It hit for me a lot different coming. It felt more hopeful and fun, and, like,
it's almost three times as big. Like,
yeah.
So it's crazy that the scope of it's huge, and it's crazy that they can manage to make it engaging throughout, because it is large.
Yeah. So let's talk about, we're gonna not just do this one off one. We are gonna come back, even if maybe we're gonna slow down our schedule a little bit. But we did talk about getting one out for Halloween time.
At least we could.
And that's the other movie series that we've kind of at least just started, at least a tradition of doing. I get less joy out of the bad Halloween movies than I do the bad Friday the 13th. So I don't know how long that's going to go on, but there's still a good amount of good Halloweens left. And I want to talk about Halloween 2. So just the immediate sequel, not to be confused again with Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, or Halloween, which we've already done, which is the sequel to Halloween 1. So Halloween 2, is that clear?
I understand what you're, so, you know, maybe our audience will be, but I got it.
The one from 1981. Okay. I'll be interested in hearing if there's if that is confirmed or not, or if there's things that catch you off guard with it if you haven't seen it since high school or so.
I mean, it would have been at least that long, so.
Yeah. So looking forward to doing that. So let's just get to our business stuff. We still have an email account on the screen at Gmail, and we still have X, Maybe I don't use that one. I have it, and I guess I'd get a notification if you sent me something on it, but a lot of Nazis on that platform these days that make it not great to use. But yeah, we're at Scream Selling there. We have a Facebook group. That's probably the best way to actually like interact and reach out to us. We will accept you on in there. If you jump on in, we'll start to see some activity again here in the near times. It's been pretty fallow as we've taken our hiatus here. If you could leave us a review on the podcatcher of your choice, iTunes, Spotify tend to drive the most traffic. And then I recommend if you have a bad review to give that, maybe you do like we did and just take a 7-month hiatus, just, really, really take some time to sit on it and think about it and, you know, then go fuck yourself. But yeah, thank you so much for tuning in, and we look forward to doing next time, Halloween 2. Until then, bye-bye.
Bye.